to Gibbs Grammar. I'm Carol Helland, and I'm the Gibbs Grammar instructor for this session, and I look forward to doing it. This is, I think, my fifth Gibbs group in the teaching of grammar. Last night, Terry Zimmerman asked the question, how can we, wives, help our husbands, support them while they're going through Gibbs? And perhaps I can give you an answer from a reverse role, and that would be from my husband's perspective. Since I began teaching in Gibbs in 1992, I've spent a lot of time studying the Word, working with verses that I could share with students, writing handouts, tests, grading papers, grammar exercises, checking diagrams. It's taken a lot of time. And in the process, I am in the computer room, or I'm studying at night, or during the weekends. And I was doing that again as I was preparing for the lesson today. And it was last Saturday, and Barry came in the office, and he said to me, I just want you to know this, Carol. He said, I have never for one moment resented Gibbs and the work that you've spent throughout the years in the preparation of it. He said, because I see that we're in this together, and that though we have different roles in this Gibbs program, mine is in here to support and pray for you and help you and also bring you coffee whenever you need it. So it's the attitude of each for the other and both for Christ. And so maybe that can be helpful. Now, I want to dispel some horror stories that I know are floating out there. They were mentioned last night. And so what I thought I would do for just a few moments is share with you former students' comments about the Gibbs grammar class. This was from our last cohort of Gibbs. And at the end of the cohort, I asked students to write an evaluation of the course. And I'm not going to read all of them, but I'm going to read snippets of some of them so you can see what they had to say at the end of it. The worksheets, workbook, and text are valuable resources, as well as the corrected assignments. It was great to go back to the fundamentals of breaking sentences into subjects and verbs, then determining what everything else was. And my primary issue, wrote one student, was time management, stewardship, not difficulty of the course. A student wrote, I learned how important the verb is in a sentence and also infinitive phrases and how they enhance your writing. And I also saw, as I went in and looked at the scriptures, how beautifully written the Bible is. And she commented, it was just the right amount of homework and your grading is fine, more lenient than pastors. Thank you. This student wrote, I learned that when one begins to understand and break down the grammatical structure of the Bible passages, one can see more clearly what the author was trying to get across. What a great tool for understanding scriptures. It was actually less difficult than I thought it would be. It was still very challenging, but being self-proclaimed weak in this area, I was a little worried about how I might do. I try not to think about it too much beforehand and instead just ask God for help. I figured if he could create the world out of nothing, he could certainly help me to understand grammar. This student writes, I didn't really know much about what to expect coming into this class. I just knew I didn't care for grammar in junior high and high school. At times it was grueling to dig in and really dissect a sentence, but I gained a real appreciation for our language through this process in Gibbs. The class wasn't extremely hard. The discipline and patience were more difficult, though, to muster at times. And I came in with less than pleasant memories of learning grammar, accompanied by a touch of skepticism. I left with a much deeper appreciation for the understanding of our language, especially as it relates to the Word of God and communicating it to people. And this was an interesting comment that I received. It came all the way from Zambia. And Jason Sowers and Kurt Witzig were in Zambia, Livingstone, Zambia, on November 30th, 2011. And Jason was sharing his journal with me via email. And one day, this journal entry pops up, and it said this, today we taught the second grammar lesson, verbs. Thanks to Mrs. Helen's teaching and notes, I'm able to bring hell land to Zambia. They are seeing immense benefit in learning grammar. We will be reviewing verbs and their importance tomorrow, as today's loss of power made it difficult to teach these truths in grammar. So the work that we do here, not only in the grammar class, but in your other courses as well, travels all over the world in the sense that you take what you have learned with you to better communicate the Word of God. So what a privilege it is. I find it always such a wonderful opportunity for me too, as I revisit the Gibbs coursework that I have done and go back in and look at verses and also new verses that I want to share with you that I've dissected and find the hidden truths that are in there. And they're unsearchable. And you'll be able to see verses that you've probably maybe glazed over or glossed over in past and say, look at what's in here and look at the truths. And so I hope that you're able to see that today. You know, we all come from a factory wired for language. By the time we know what it is, we've got it. Toddlers don't think about language. They just talk. So grammar is a later addition and usually met with some apprehension. Sometimes that starts in third or fourth grade when they have to identify parts of speech or diagram sentences or write papers or speak in front of a group. Now, English is not easy as languages go. It began 1,500 years ago when Germanic tribes, mainly Angles and Saxons, invaded Britain, a Celtic-speaking land, already colonized by Latin-speaking Romans. And into this Anglo-Saxon stew went big dollops of French and Italian and Spanish and German and Dutch and Portuguese and Danish and more Latin and, yes, Greek. And within a few hundred years, English was an extraordinarily rich broth. And today, it's believed to have the largest lexicon of any modern language. And it's still evolving. In fact, on the radio 2 days ago, I heard it announced that the word Google has now made the Webster's Dictionary, as in Google the topic as a verb, or Google can be used as a noun. So it's interesting as we watch our language evolve. But also, it'll be even more interesting as we go into the scriptures and see its relevance in the Word of God. Now, I have asked for you to purchase these books, and I believe they will be available to you within the week. We're having a difficult time getting them, but it's the Abaca curriculum. It's a college edition of the Grammar and Composition Workbook, and it's also the Handbook of Grammar and Composition. And as I mentioned to you, I can't possibly cover it all, so I expect that when I put in the handouts, the study portions for you, that's what you're doing, and you're going in there on your own and having that process as you're assimilating the information. And also, I'm trusting that you'll take the handouts that I'm providing for you and dig in and use them and study. Again, I cannot possibly cover all this material in the time I have, so I've tried to provide you with many resources to assist you along the way. As we think of launching the grammar course, we have to note that one important function of grammar is the study of the 8 parts of speech. So every word in the English language can be classified according to its special function in the sentence as one of the 8 parts of speech. So here they are. Noun and pronoun. We're going to talk about those today. A verb, which can show action. It can show state of being, or it can be helping. We have adjectives, which modify nouns and pronouns. We have conjunctions, that joins words or phrases or clauses together. We have adverbs in our language that modify nouns, adjectives, or other adverbs. We have prepositions that show how a noun or pronoun is related to some other word in a sentence. And we have interjections, which are exclamatory words that are not grammatically related to other words in a sentence. And the Psalms are filled with those as we think of interjections. So when you do get your workbook, I'd like you to turn to page 2 of the workbook. And you'll see that there are some verses in that portion. And also there are other sentences, and I'm just going to read them to you now since you don't have the workbook, and you'll be able to reference this when you do. When you see the verses in the college handbook, you'll notice that they have used the old King James Version. So sometimes we'll go back and forth between the old and the new. And here we have on page 2, parts of speech, I'm going to read you the verse. It's from 1 John 4:12. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. If is the conjunction, love is the verb, us is the pronoun, and love is a noun. And you might say, my, love serves two functions in there, as a noun and a verb. Indeed, we'll see that as we move forward in our studies. Here's another verse for you from Job 8:19. Behold, this is the joy of his way, and out of the earth shall others grow. Behold is the interjection. This is the pronoun. Joy is the noun. And is the conjunction. And grow is the verb. By the time that we're finished with Gibbs grammar, you'll be able to not only identify every word in a verse, but you'll also be able to identify how each word, each phrase, each clause is interconnected and how they all serve to function one with the other. As we move forward in our studies, we'll be beginning with rather simple sentences and simple verses and moving more toward the compound and the complex. And if time permits, we might even venture into the book of Romans, which is probably the most difficult book to diagram. So we might step our toes into that book. But I certainly will give you the tools necessary to be able to look at a verse and see its components and what's in there for you and how rich it is. So let's start with nouns. The noun and its function. The noun is a very important word in English grammar and in the English language, and it is just as important in the Greek that you will see when you study with Tom Stiegel. So as we study nouns, you're going to see the parallel when you study with Pastor Stiegel, the terms used with English and Greek grammar, and you'll hear these synonymous terms. You'll hear the terms inflection, case, number, exical form, definite article, predicate nominative, and declension. So we'll study them in the English grammar side, and you'll also be seeing that on the Greek. And this is how when Pastor Roxer mentioned last night that English grammar and Greek grammar dovetail into each other, you'll see that as we move forward. When you look at your handbook, you'll notice the definition of the noun, which is on pages 16 and 17 in your handbook. And I would trust right now that you're also following along in your handout as I'm teaching the lesson. As you probably remember from the English classes, the definition of a noun is perhaps the easiest for you to remember. And I bet you could parrot it to me. Could you do that if I asked you, what is the definition of a noun? You probably could say, I know what it is, right? It's the name of a person, place, thing, or idea. So in Greek, interestingly enough, nouns also indicate a person, a place, a thing, or idea, just as they do in English. So as we move into our study, we're going to see that we have a wealth of nouns in our English language, and there's certainly a plethora of nouns in the verses as well. So we have nouns as the backbone of our sentences. Now, they're not what make the sentences move along. That's what the verbs do. But they are what does the moving or are moved along. And you're going to find next session that when we talk about verbs, that this is the most important word in the sentence, the verb is, but the nouns certainly play an important role as well. Now, in English, most nouns do not have gender. That is, most nouns that do not refer to living beings are neither masculine nor feminine. And you'll hear from Tom Stiegel that that's not the case in Greek. Every noun is either masculine or feminine or neuter. This is the way that those who spoke the language and wrote the language thought of those words. So in your Greek studies, you will learn the gender of a noun, and here's a key point, based on the article that is attached to the vocabulary word when you learn it. So you might say, well, what is an article? An article is a function word, and you probably know them very well. We use them often. A, an, A-N, or the. The is the definite article. It's used both when the speaker and the writer and the hearer or the reader are familiar with what is being discussed. So, for instance, here's an example. Did you bring the present? The is a definite article coming before the noun present, and it is, we know what is being discussed. A or a is an indefinite article. It's used when we don't have a specific item in mind. Did you bring a present, for instance? And an, is the variant of a, and it's dependent on the sound of the word before it. So you probably remember from your English classes that if a vowel comes before that, you use an for the most part, but it's also based on the sound of the word. For instance, an orange or a one-shot deal. Yes. Pardon me? It's considered quite often an adjective. Mm-hmm. The question was, what part of speech is an article? And I said it's typically used like an adjective, but we'll get to that later. We also have other determiners of nouns we're going to find when we move on in our grammar studies, like demonstratives, pronouns, possessive pronouns, numbers, and indefinite pronouns, and that's going to be in our study today. Now, when you look at your handout, you get to go in verses for the homework. Most of the homework you do is tied to verses. So in exercise one, it says write all exercises on a separate sheet of paper. And this is what I'd like you to do when you have any assignment like this, is that you type it and you identify them, and then you will be turning it in to me. Those of you who are here at the DBC Church will be handing it to me in 2 weeks, all of your homework. And those of you who are in the off-site location, you too will be typing all your work in the computer, and you'll be sending your electronic copies to Jim Miller. And then on the Saturday when I arrive, Jim will be giving me your homework. So every 2 weeks I'll be receiving and giving. That means giving back to you. So that's how we're going to work through the homework. So look what you get to do. You get to go into Scripture. You need to think about 10 persons found in the Bible. You need to think about 10 places found in the Bible, 10 things mentioned in the Bible, and 10 ideas mentioned in the Bible. You might say, what's an idea? Idea could be something like love, truth, faithfulness, gentleness. It's considered abstract in nature, something that's difficult to get a hold of with your senses and touch, but yet it's very real. So when you look at exercise 2, you will be able to identify every noun in Matthew 2, 1 through 6. This is the story of the visit of the Magi. So I want you to go in there, and with each verse, I want you to identify, for instance, Matthew 2, 1. So you write down verse 1, and then you list the nouns in that verse. And though you might have been so familiar with this story and gone through it many times, the actual study of it and getting in there and looking at it just makes it pop. There are many kinds of nouns. There are common nouns and there are proper nouns, for instance. And there are collective nouns, and there are concrete nouns, and then there are abstract nouns. A common noun is just as it says. I don't need any capitalization on me. I'm just a podium. Or I'm a microphone. Or I'm a headset. Hymnal. It's common and it does not require a capital letter. But the proper nouns do. And the proper nouns refer to a particular person or place, like the Battle of Armageddon, Pastor Rocks or Bible, River of Euphrates. It's a particular place or person. A collective noun refers to a group or class. For instance, right here, I have a class. I have one class, though I have many members, and the one class, and I'm looking at Minneapolis and Milwaukee, so I'm including all of you, it's one, though you're collective in nature, so it typically takes a singular form. We have concrete nouns that apply to something that can be perceived by one or more of the senses, like water or honey or flower or satin. And we have abstract nouns, which means that it's applied to a general quality or idea, like bravery, ambition, or pity, or empathy. So as you think about nouns, we see on the overhead, on the PowerPoint, many that are listed for us. So again, I'm asking you in your assignment today to list 5 proper nouns for God that you find in the Bible and 5 common nouns to show a characteristic of God. And I put one down for an example, like refuge. When you go into exercise 4 in Matthew 2, 7 through 10, you'll see the story of the Magi before Herod and their departure to Bethlehem. Now, the tendency in the study of grammar would be to just dig right in and do the assignment. And here's my recommendation. Before you dig right in, you can prayerfully approach it, but read it. Read it once all the way through. Just take in the essence of the passage and then go in and see what's there for you to find. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. So, God as your refuge. It seems like that could be an abstract noun or a common noun. Because refuge is abstract, isn't it?
Well, I see it more as concrete and common. Yeah, I see it as a entity, as a thing, so that he is this. He is our refuge. So I see it as a noun and a common noun. You'll also see when we get into the diagramming that really is a predicate nominative. I don't want to confuse you too much. Right. Correct. So when you are studying again the scriptures, and I hope you saw that on the syllabus that I gave you a quote from Martin Luther. Prayer is the better half of study. Don't forget that. Because our tendency is to just get the work done, get in there, and take a step back and say, Father, I'm here to see what you have for me. That you would undertake in my study and show me what it is that you want me to see. And that I could not first apply it in my own life. And then, through the power of the Holy Spirit, I trust that you will apply it in the lives of others. And I want to caution you on that. Great things are done with great prayer. So when you get into Matthew 2, 7 through 10, you'll see the story of the Magi before Herod and their departure to Bethlehem. And in that portion, you'll be identifying the common nouns, the proper nouns, the concrete nouns, the collective nouns, and the abstract nouns. When I go through and look at your work, I'll just be identifying them and giving points appropriately to what you've identified. And then when you think, okay, I think I've heard all I need to hear now about nouns, Carol, there can't be anything more, can there? Well, there is one more. And you can see that in your handout, can't you? It's called an appositive. And an appositive follows another noun, and it renames or explains it or identifies it. So in exercise 5, Proverbs 1, 1 through 9, you'll be able to go in there and see the instruction to sons, and you'll be able to see the quite a few appositives listed in there. So when you look at the handout that I provided for you, notice the definition. And a positive functions as a noun that follows another noun to explain or identify it. So, for instance, Nehemiah, the king's cupbearer, rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. Cupbearer is the appositive there. It's telling you more about Nehemiah. Could you get away with not having that phrase in there? Could you say Nehemiah built the walls of Jerusalem? Oh, indeed you could. But the appositive renames it. It tells you more about it. It gives you more of an essence. So, you know, Nehemiah. Cupbearer. Now, sometimes appositives are set off by commas and sometimes they're not. Usually they're set off by commas when they follow a proper noun, and they're not set off by commas when they don't. So if they're non-essential to the meaning of the sentence, then we have the commas. And we're going to learn more about that when we get into composition. So that's just a look ahead up to where we're going to go. So appositives are another important function in our study of the scriptures as well. Now let's go through and see what we can look for as we think about pronouns as well, and we're going to be moving into that momentarily. When you think about nouns and our study when we get into grammar, you're going to see that nouns serve many different places in the sentence, that they can move around based on their function. So sometimes nouns say, I'm going to be the subject of the sentence, and this is where you'll find me. Some nouns say, I'm going to be the complement in the sentence. And you're going to see me in the direct object position. Or you're going to see me in the indirect object position. Or you're going to see me in the subject complement position. Or you're going to see me in the objective complement position. Some nouns say, I'm the object of the preposition. That's where you're going to find me in this sentence. And some nouns say, of course, I'm an appositive. I rename a noun. And some will say, hey, I'm the noun of direct address. And all of these we're going to be able to identify as we go through our study. So though nouns are very simply defined as a person, place, thing, or idea, we're going to say, my, they serve many functions in those sentences. Now, as we move into pronouns, they are typically tiny words that can give you a big headache. So let me forewarn you. They're very complicated, and yet they're very humble. Pronouns are usually small. I'll give you some, like I, me, we, us, he, she, it. But they can be among the biggest troublemakers in our language, so I need to give you that warning. But we're not going to let them thwart our plan. If you've ever been picked on by the pronoun police who have said this to you, don't say, it is me. Say, it is I. Don't say, Trixie loves spaghetti more than me. You need to say, Trixie loves spaghetti more than I. Don't say, has anybody lost their wallet? The proper way to say it, has anybody lost his or her wallet? Now, don't despair. Though you might think, well, if I talk like that, Carol, I'm going to sound like a stuffed shirt. Well, you determine, you know, what your speech will be, but I'm just here to teach you the rules and the proper terminology when it comes to the roles of the parts of speech, and particularly those pronouns. Now, no one is exempt from having their pronoun second-guessed. And it takes a certain amount of effort to get the pronouns straight, because there are a lot of them. And few people do it automatically, so we're going to take our time, and we'll watch out for trap doors, and I'm here to lead you around them as we go through this study. But if I can put it simply, for the definition of a pronoun, it is this. A pronoun is an understudy for a noun. In fact, the word pronoun means for the noun. It really is a humble part of speech the way I see it. And it says to the noun, you don't have to repeat yourself all the time. That's why I'm here as the pronoun. I'm here to take your place, to make the speech and the language of the sentence move along more smoothly. So let me do that. However, as a pronoun, you need to know that I take many parts and take many functions. I can be personal pronoun. I can be a demonstrative pronoun. I can be an interrogative pronoun. I can serve many places. But I'm here to help. So if you can think of it that way, you'll learn not to avoid the dreaded pronoun problem. You realize they serve a purpose and a function. And I want to show you how that is. They have many different uses in English and in Greek. And remember, they stand in for the noun to avoid repetition. But sometimes the pronoun is added to add emphasis to a noun. When I was studying 1 Peter 5:10, and this was for my own personal study, I was noting the pronouns in this verse. And I want to share it with you so that you can see the value of grammar and how this will not only aid your own personal study, but the study for others as well. Let me read the verse to you. And the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a little while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. When I went through that verse, I noted the pronouns in that verse. I circled them. And then I also noted the verbs in the verse. And I noted how Peter reinforced the subject of the verse, of the word God, the subject of the sentence. And then I found the pronouns in that verse of you, us, his, and who. And it showed me God is personally involved in the caring for his people. I saw that through the study of the pronouns in that verse. That God is not removed from me in my suffering and my situation. He's not far away from me through it all. He doesn't leave me to struggle on my own. but he's personally concerned for each one of us to strengthen, to sustain, to make us steadfast as we see his eternal glory in heaven. That's just one verse. Just looking again at the pronouns, who, us, his, and you. And this is what will be one of the great benefits as you're going through and having to, you know, find the particular parts of speech. You'll see those things, and it will comfort you. So the pronouns are for the noun, and there are several, as I mentioned. They're personal, or they're possessive, or they're indefinite, demonstrative, interrogative, reflexive, intensive, and relative. Now, again, I have already warned you, and I'll keep doing that, both in English and Greek, the pronouns are strange. They're highly inflected. As a matter of fact, the pronoun in English is one of the most highly inflected parts of speech in our language. So you're going to find out as we move through that they have cases to them, and that's in your handout. The nominative case, which is the subject case, the predicate nominative case. The genitive case, which is the possessive case, like mine. The dative case, which we'll find in our future studies, which is the indirect object case. Or the accusative case, which will be the direct object case. So when we think about personal pronouns, and we're going to start there, it says it right in its title. It refers to the grammar notion of person. And these indicate the speaker, the person spoken to, or the person spoken about. And they may be identified by their case, their person, their number, or their gender. So if you would please turn in your handout to the box that identifies the cases of the pronouns. These handouts that I provide for you will be great references for you, not only in the English grammar, but also you'll be able to segue them into Greek grammar as well. Sometimes it's easier for it to see it in the English first and then be able to reference it in the Greek. So as you look at the pronouns in our language, in the nominative case, we see that they take numbers to them. They're either singular or plural. Plural meaning more than one. We see that they take persons, like the first person, which is the speaker or the writer. The I or the we. The second person, which is the listener or the reader. The you. Or the third person, whatever, whoever is being discussed, like he, she, it, they, them. When we get to composition class, I'll be asking you the question, you know, what voice are you in? Are you in the first person when you're going to write your paper? Is it coming from your perspective? Are you going to be in the second person, which means you, which means you're referencing others? Or are you going to take the more distant approach, which is the research type of paper, the he, she, it, they, them? So as grammarians and also as writers, we often analyze, you know, what case am I speaking or writing in? The possessive case shows ownership, possession. Or it also can be used as adjectives that we will see, like my, or mine, his, her, its. Will you please notice that little pronoun, its, I-T-S? Do you notice that there's no apostrophe there? There again, here's where the pronoun police sometimes come in, and many people say, you've misidentified the word its because you've put an apostrophe in it, meaning I-T apostrophe S, which is it is. Some people think because it's the possessive that it needs the apostrophe after the S, like I-T-S, which again is errant. That there's no apostrophe after that when you're using it as a possessive pronoun. So we'll want to watch for that. Same is true for theirs, T-H-E-I-R-S. And then the objective case pronouns are used as direct objects, indirect objects, and objects of a preposition. And again, you don't have to worry too much about it at this time. We'll go on our study, and we'll be studying all those different forms when we get to the advanced studies of the objective case. So as we think of personal pronouns and recognize them, let's look at some verses and identify them if we can do so. This is coming from Isaiah 45:22a. Look to me and be saved. Could you please identify for me the pronoun in the sentence, the personal pronoun in the sentence? And you can just speak it. Me. Do not worry about your life. That's an interesting thing about this, your. What type of pronoun is it? As we think of the personal pronoun, it is it's a possessive, isn't it? Your life. But we'll also notice when we get to our future studies, in adjectives, that my goodness, this pronoun is really telling me more about the life, isn't it? It's describing, it's your life. So we're going to see that that's functioning as an adjective. And that pronoun is serving that purpose. Fear not, for I am with you. From Isaiah 41:10a. What is the pronoun in the sentence? You, yes. And when we get to our further studies, we'll see, oh, look at this is taking the objective case because we'll be able to see that this isn't an object of a preposition position. But I'm not asking that of you now. It's just further information. Let's go on now and talk about indefinite pronouns. And I need somebody to be my watchkeeper for me. Pastor said I could have a little more time. I think I'm supposed to be finished at 10:40. I think he gave me 10 minutes beyond that, but I want somebody to help me make sure that I stay on course. Is it 10:26 right now? 10:23. Okay, I think at 1:45, I'm supposed to finish. All right, so we saw this about our personal pronouns, and I'm going to ask you then on your own, you can see this in the handout, to go into Matthew 2:11-15, which is the story of the visit of the Magi. And in this portion, I will want you to first remember the process. You read it first. You prayerfully read the passage in its entirety. And then you go in and you look at it verse by verse and you say, all right, where are the personal pronouns in Matthew 2:11? Where are the pronouns in Matthew 2:12? And so forth. And you'll be able to write to those. So we talked about personal pronouns, and let's talk about indefinite. Can you tell me what the word indefinite means? If you say, I'm indefinite on that. What does the word indefinite mean?
Uncertain.
I mean, it doesn't have any kind of bearing, really, when you think about a definitive action or attitude. So indefinite, in the pronoun sense, too, is it doesn't relate to a person as clearly as personal pronouns do. Now, wouldn't you know it? Some indefinite pronouns are singular. Some indefinite pronouns are plural. And yes, some could be singular or plural. So this is what I've done for you. I have created a box, and I've put in this box the singular pronouns, like anybody. Can you hear that sounds like singular? Body sounds like one. Anything, either, no one, somebody, someone. There are plural indefinites, like both, and few, and many, and several, and others. And then sometimes pronouns of the indefinite type can be singular or plural depending upon its use in the sentence, and that's when we get in there as grammarians and we find out, is this serving as a singular or a plural indefinite pronoun, like all or any or more or most or none. Sometimes it's just best for us to get into the scriptures and look at them and find them there. We learn the best that way. So I've pulled some verses for us to look at, and we're going to look at Romans 14:7, and what I've done is I've used the New King James Version. I believe that's what you have before you, so I reference that. Romans 14:7. For none of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself. Now, we're not looking for all the pronouns in this verse right now. We're just going to be looking for the indefinites. Can you find it? Can you find it? Okay, that is a pronoun, but that's a reflexive pronoun. Right now, we're just going to be looking for the indefinite, but I'm very impressed that you found it. None, yes. What's its number? What's none? Can you look at your handout? Either. So none of us lives unto himself and dies to himself. What would you think would it be its number? Sometimes it's plural because you see the word us there, don't you? Yeah. So sometimes we have to look at the reference of it in the sentence. Yes. You're absolutely right. I should have done this to the prepositional phrase. Thank you, Richard. For whatever is not of faith is sin. Now, I don't think I put that in your handout, the word whatever, but that also is considered an indefinite pronoun. And if you look at it in the Old King James Version, it's whatsoever. So, for whatsoever is not of faith is sin. Can you find your indefinite? Mm-hmm. Whatever, yes. I don't think I have that in your handouts. You might want to include that. And Colossians 3:17a, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus. Can you find the indefinite in here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. And then all actually is not serving there in the sense of the indefinite pronoun. That's going to be functioning there as a noun in that case. It can serve that purpose. Mm-hmm. Then we have demonstrative pronouns, which are interesting as well. And when you get into the verses, you'll be able to see a whole lot of demonstrative pronouns. And they demonstrate. That's its root word there, demonstrative. There are not many. There are only four of them. This and that, these and those. And demonstrative pronouns are used to point out persons or things. This and that are singular in number, and these and those are plural in number. And sometimes such is considered a demonstrative pronoun as well. Now, this and these show physical closeness to the speaker or writer, like this notebook, this hymnal, this workbook. It shows relative closeness. These systems. If I'm showing distance, like for instance, that booth or those women, if there's in the back, I'm showing a distance from me to them. So as you think of the verse, John 1:34, it says this, and I, John, and I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. Of God. I'm going to read that verse to you again. And I, and John is speaking here, saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. By using that demonstrative pronoun, this, what is he showing? Keeping in mind what this and that and these and those refer to. Remember, this and these refer to closeness, and that and those show distance. Yes, and again, I'm going to read that verse. Think in mind of the demonstrative, and this means closeness. And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. Yeah, close. He was close to him. He was personally part of his ministry. He bear record personally that this is the Son of God. As you look in the verses, and I have a long list of them, don't I, there for you to identify, we have many demonstrative pronouns in our language and in verses. And you'll see that as you go through, like for instance, John has many of them that I've referenced, and also does Luke. And so I'd like you to find the demonstrative pronouns in that portion of Scripture. But let's look for them here in this verse as well. 1 Corinthians 3:11. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Can you find for me the demonstrative pronouns in this verse? Okay. All right. Just for the fun of it. Should we do some fun here? Can you find any other pronouns in there that aren't demonstrative but have some other form? Okay. We'll get to that. That's good. Anyone? Yeah. And what was that? We just talked about that. And that is what type of pronoun? Yeah, well, it is. What is what type of pronoun is it? Singular, yes. And it is a... Okay, we'll go back and look in your notes. Can you see it under the indefinite category? Okay. Isn't that a lovely verse? And this is the opportunity that you're going to be able to have as Gibbs students in this class, is to take a verse that you probably memorized, I hope you have, and thought about, and think about it even in a different way, and be able to look at the words and how they relate to one another. Well, you think, aren't we done yet with pronouns? You mean there are more categories of them? Indeed there are. Indeed there are. There are what we call the interrogative pronouns. but they're not so difficult to find because they simply ask questions. Do you know what the word, the root word of interrogative is? Can you figure what that out is? Interrogate. Which means to ask questions. And that's the purpose of interrogative pronouns. They ask questions. So we have them, and here they are. They're who, whose, whom, which, and what. And they're functioning as interrogatives when they're asking questions. So in your exercise, you'll be able to identify pronouns in the following verses, and you'll be able to do that on your own. But we can do this here in class right now. And we can look at a verse from 1 Corinthians 2:16a. For who has known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? Now we have a lot of pronouns in that verse, don't we? But let's first of all look for the interrogative. Who? Yes. Do you want to, just for the fun of it, look for other pronouns? Do you want it for the fun of it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you see how personal our God is? And when you're studying the scriptures, and even when you're getting in here with the pronouns, like I did in the 1 Peter 5:10 verse, you'll be able to identify that. The connectivity between God and us. And that he never leaves us nor forsakes us. So the pronouns play a key role in the verses in showing us that. And that's what I love about the pronouns, though sometimes they can cause us some angst.
The fact that him is not capitalized, mm-hmm. I know sometimes we can get lazy with the capitalization. Mm-hmm. I know that it's referring to God, but in this case, is he and him?
I took it right from the scriptures, and you notice in the scriptures that it's not. But when you're writing, you always capitalize words that refer to God in the Bible.
So him is in reference to the Lord.
Mm-hmm. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? No, that particular reference is to you. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? He's instructing us. Mm-hmm. But in the question about him referring to God, yes, you do capitalize that, especially when you're writing. Who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? It's a great question from Esther 4, 14c. Where is your pronoun, your interrogative pronoun? Who? Isn't that a great question? All right, I will go on now. And you think, all right, Carol, that's it. There cannot be another category of pronouns, and there is. And it's called the reflexive pronoun. And reflexive pronouns are interesting as well. They're called intensive or reflexive pronoun. The intensive pronouns, think of it that way, intensive, intensify a particular noun, emphasize it. And reflexive means that they return back to the object or the action in the sentence and the direct objects of their verbs. So here's intensive. I myself urged you to study. Now, the person could say, I urged you to study. But if you wanted to intensify it to the students, you say, I myself urged you to study. I'm telling you more about the I there, that I'm really emphasizing it with intensity. Here's the reflexive form. You did the work yourself. The students themselves must do the work. There's intensive. The students will hurt themselves. Now, I have to warn you, writers and speakers, that the intensive reflexive pronouns are never used as subjects or compound direct objects in formal English. So, for instance, you might hear people say something like this. John and myself did it. Grammarians cringe because I call it the sins of the selfish. Because the reflexive ends in self or selves, where the formal is, John and I did it. Keeping in mind again that these reflexive pronouns emphasize or they refer to the subject. Here's another informal. He asked John and myself. He asked John and me. So again, keeping in mind the function of those reflexive intensive pronouns, that they should not take the place of ordinary pronouns like I, me, she, her, and they. Remember, they only emphasize or they refer to the subject. So let's look at some reflexive pronouns in verses that we have in front of us. For the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. If you don't mind, if you want to share with me where you find the reflexive pronoun. The Lord hath made all things for himself. And from Samuel 36, see, David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. And you see that again, it's referring back again, intensifying it in the word David. Okay, Carol, that's it. That's all I can take in. Say no more. I'm sorry, I must. There's the relative pronoun. Yes, relative pronouns, again, have a big function in our language and in the verses that we will study. They relate to persons or objects. And the most common ones are who, whom, whose, which, and that. These are very important for us to learn because they were going to identify the beginning of clauses that we will find frequently in the verses that we study. So we want to be able to identify them. A relative pronoun then will introduce an adjective clause that modifies a noun, and we'll get to that in our further studies. So I think the best thing for us right now to do is to find some. With the handout that you have before you, you can see them listed there for you. The who, whose, whom, which, and that. Remind yourself that they relate to persons or objects, and these are the most common that I've identified. Quite often, again, they start what we call dependent clauses, and dependent clauses we'll find in the future will have subjects and verbs. Quite often they don't express a complete thought. But first of all, we're not going to worry about the clause right now. We just want to find that relative pronoun. So here's a verse from Proverbs 12:11a. He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread. We're just looking right now for the relative. Who? And when we do get to our further studies, which I know you're anxious to do, we'll find out, oh my goodness, look at that. It introduced that clause sitting right there in the middle of that verse. In Proverbs 28:13a, he who covers his sins will not prosper. And the relative pronoun is? Well, again, we'll see when we get to our further studies the clause. Proverbs 13:13b, he who fears the commandment will be rewarded. And can we find a relative pronoun? Who? And again, we'll find that clause. Well, guess what? We finally reached the end of those pronouns. And I did warn you, didn't I, that they can be quite complicated and quite tricky. But I do have a handout, and how much time do I have? 5 minutes, okay. So do you have the pronoun types in class exercise before you? Okay, great. So for those in Milwaukee and those in Minneapolis, have that in-class exercise in front of you. And I'd like you to look at the verses that we're going to study, and you're going to find the pronouns in these verses and identify them according to their type. Can we get that far? And I don't think we'll be able to get through all six of them since I have only 5 minutes, but we'll get through a few, and then on your own you can do the rest. So don't work ahead of us here, but here we go. How beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace. I'm going to give you a few moments here to find them on your own, and then we'll talk them through. So asking from Minneapolis and also Milwaukee and here in Duluth, feel free to share. I think, Pucci, there, you get the text messages, don't you, when they come in? You didn't get any. Okay, so they're telling on the other side, but I'm sure they're with us here, and who would like to identify them? Oh, I see. Oh, thank you for that. Robert, why don't you begin with this? Do you want to identify the pronouns for us? Yes, in the first verse. Okay, them and that are the two pronouns. And we'll take it a step further. And what type of pronoun is them? Robert?
That is a relative.
Very good. That is a relative pronoun. And them is personal, yes. And again, it's going to help you now until you get familiar with these to have those, that handout in front of you, and also the handbook that you will eventually receive. And you'll have that in front of you too as you're studying these scriptures, and then these are going to become very familiar to you in your study. Interesting verse in number 2, isn't it? For many are called, but few are chosen. Just looking at those pronouns, it speaks volumes in that verse, doesn't it? Can you find the pronouns there? Many and few. My goodness, I have a message right out of that verse, don't I? That one verse, I could build a message. The contrast between many and few. You see what pronouns do? For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Where are the pronouns there? We and we. And what type of pronouns are the we and the we? Okay, you can go back to your charts and you can find it there in your chart. The we. Remember, personal. Remember, personal refers to person. We should go back to verse 2. I'm sorry, I didn't ask you to identify the type of pronoun in verse 2, the many and the few. What is that type of pronoun?
Indefinite,
isn't it? All right. One more verse before we close, because this has a lot of pronouns in this verse. Here we go. And notice the perfect English here, too. It is he. Not it is him. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. This verse is filled with pronouns, isn't it? It's all, almost all pronouns. So see if you can find them, and maybe we can even do the next step and identify what type. Filled with pronouns. And again, notice the perfect English there that I referred to at the beginning. It is he. So who wants to take a venture on this and say, I will offer my thoughts on the pronouns in this verse? Do you feel you're ready to do that? If not, I can help you. Or anybody from Milwaukee or Minneapolis? Okay, we'll start with it. Should we do that? Okay. It. There it is. And what type of pronoun is it? The case, yes. And then as you think about the type of pronoun it is, that's very good you picked out the case of it. Because it's acting as a subject of the sentence, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's certainly the personal pronoun, isn't it? It is he. What is the pronoun there? He. And what type of pronoun is it? Personal, yeah. That hath made us. There's a clause and there's a that. And what type of pronoun is that, did we say? Relative, yes. And we're going to notice as we move on that that is introducing an adjective clause there, isn't it? That hath made us. What is us? Personal. And not we. Personal. And look at that. Ourselves. Which is a pronoun. And remember what type it is, because what type of pronoun ends in self or selves? Reflexive, yes. Reflexive. Again, you can look at the last two verses on your own and identify. But I hope that you've seen in this brief study that we've had this past hour together from Minneapolis to Milwaukee here to Duluth the significance of a grammatical study of the scriptures. Now, just in summary again, to review what we've done, though nouns typically express the name of a living being or a lifeless thing, it's sometimes difficult to decide on the noun basis of a particular word, and quite often we look at the article that precedes it. That can be a noun determiner for us. We also learned that a freestanding noun can be replaced by a pronoun, and that the pronoun, the term really means, I'm for the noun. So we like pronouns. They're very humble, and they say, nouns, you're doing a lot of work here, and I'm going to take your place, so that you don't have to repeat yourself all the time. So we've seen already in our study in grammar that nouns and pronouns constitute a very important part of English grammar. And you'll see that's true in Greek grammar as well. But the nouns cannot operate by themselves. And next study we're going to say, the verb's going to come in and say, here I am. Here I am to help you. I'm going to show you action, or I'm going to link you, or I'm going to be a helping verb, but you need me. And without me, the verb, you're not going to have a sentence. I don't care how many pronouns and nouns you have. So that's not going to be our next study. Verse number 3. In that case, it's functioning, actually is functioning as a noun. Mm-hmm. Okay, the question was to identify the pronouns in verse 3, and the we is the personal, and on both sides of that, but, which is a connecting word, and we seek one to come, one is functioning there actually as the noun. Yes. Mm-hmm. So you think in that way that it is? Perhaps. Yeah, I'll have to think on that one, Robert. Good question. So any more? Well, again, it's a pleasure to spend some time with you. When you have homework in this book, then you'll just be not tearing out the pages, for those of you who are here at DBC. But you'll actually be writing the answers and then putting it on a sheet of paper. I prefer the computer if you can. And then handing it to me in one compendium of material. I don't want to. Oh, yes. Yeah, well, the question was, do we have... Does each page need an exercise tool? The answer is no. Save as much paper as you can. Makes it easier for me, too. Any other questions? So, all right. Tom, I think you're next, correct?